having the 60th anniversary of the Milwaukee unit of the WSL. Many of the women are here from the local unit, but some of them are here from Detroit, or from Chicago. Ann Bailey Hahn is one of our World War I members from Chicago, and also Mary Haney, who is the area director. We are going to be celebrating in just a few minutes, so I'll pick this up at a later date. Mary Haney is from Battle Creek. I made a mistake on that. Betty Brett is also here from Chicago. I'm the one who is recording is Jane Pyatt. I am the National Oral History Chairman, and I'm from the Lansing Unit in Michigan.
And we laughed till the tears ran down our cheeks.
The one thing about Churchill that I like to repeat, because you know I have to use the facilities quite frequently, so knowing that if ever I go buy one, I'm sure to use it, whether I need to or not, because
in case you might not again,
just like Churchill, I never miss an opportunity to find relief. So I
I got so I could talk in Cockney dialect, you know, with the Aussies. I would listen to them, and then when I'd go back to my room, I would repeat, you know, try to get it just right. So once when I was here, years afterward, I was at a club, and a man came in from Australia, and we were introduced, and they wanted him to meet me because I had been in Australia, and I began talking with him in the dialect and using the terms. The Adonis Saveloys, lightly. Did you tell him, oh, Saveloys? Well, that's hot dogs, you know. And such things that really people wouldn't know. And he was determined that I'm Australian. I couldn't tell him. I couldn't get it across to him that after all, I really was an American. You know, had to be. It was so funny. And you did the Bondi Beach lightly. Oh, so funny. Yes,
and speaking of other things, when I was in Japan, and I was stationed in Tokyo, and then I was sent to Fifth Air Force, you know, MASH's Fifth Air Force. So I got there, and after a couple of weeks, maybe about 2 months, I would say, the boss called me in, and he said, "Law,
speak a little louder."
He said, "Law, you are our transportation officer." I said, "Sir, transportation officer of Fifth Air Force?" He says, "Yes. I've observed the way you dig in and do research." He said, "We need a good transportation officer, and you better be a damn good one."
Isn't that great?
I thought that. And I think I was. Because at the time of the Korean conflict, it was my department that had to move all men and materiel into Korea. From Okinawa, from the islands of Japan, from the U.S. Fifth Air Force, that was there.
And then you were in charge of all of that. Great. That's great. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm. You know, when I think of, you know, women's living and everything, and I thought, well, I know when he asked me to do that, and I realized, you know, that's the Air Force.
For the whole Fifth Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a major when she retired.
Well, I wish to. If they had done the same to me as they did to the men at the time of the Korean conflict, I would have gotten. Then when I, you know, retired and got my other one, I'd have been a lieutenant colonel.
My lieutenant colonel, she came through 3 months after I retired.
Yes, this is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of little things.
Okay, stop.
have a whole set, and I wanted to find something very badly recently, and somebody who looked it up for me instead of a $975.
What did you say? I missed that. Yeah. What were you just saying?
And Mary said that she was sent five of the original carry-ons, and in the carry-ons was about
5 years of it.
And Bailey Hahn, and Bailey Hahn had a sentence on board.
Bailey Hahn came back from Florida.
We don't find much in our present day carry-ons about births, do we?
Not today.
Or even marriages.
I think one of our members of the last night is married.
In fact, your marriage was in there too.
Was it? Did it show that we were married to Madeline?
No, it didn't say her. Yes, they do get married.
It's nature's way of telling us to wear a little looser underwear.
Quentin Rivera and Pat had, I picked this girl, so I said to Pat, you better take half the money, and I'll take half the money. One was losing. And he was sitting on a bench down at the knees, looking out over the Mediterranean. And he kept wondering why this Frenchman kept walking on the other side of the street. And he slouched down on the bench, looking out over the sea. And he kept thinking, why is that Frenchman walking up and down, walking? Why doesn't he go away? And Pat's portfolio, excuse me, called portfolio in those days, had fallen out of his pet pocket on the ground.
Oh, no.
And this fellow had seen it. So Pat came back to the hotel. He had rushed back there, and of course it was gone. You see, I said, being a businesswoman, and I might lose it, or you might lose it. So I'll take half, and you'll take half. And we had not half to get back to Paris. You ever hit it? What was it they called them? The wide pocketbook for men in those days. They put it in their pants.
Wallet?
No, it wasn't a wallet. It was a portfolio, but something like that. I forgot.
No, it's a different name. I don't remember.
But it was long, you see, and it could very easily be pushed up. Mm-hmm.
Did it get back to the owner?
Beg your pardon?
Did it ever get back to the owner?
Oh, no. This was her. He was going to stay there and get it when this man left the bench. He was across the street. When my husband left the bench, he came over and picked it up.
Something, isn't it? That quick it disappeared. That quick.
Oh, my. How about telling you a story about Buffalo again?
Oh, the time we were going on leave and we wanted to get to Brussels. And Brussels was forbidden.
Why? This is after the war, wasn't it?
Yes, we never knew why. But evidently they had too many Americans going in there. Mm-hmm. Couldn't take care of them. And our object in going there was to interview a banker, an American banker who was president of the bank there, and we thought maybe we could get a job in Brussels. Well, the signal car said, you can't go to Brussels,
Lion.
They have them down there. We had friends in another department that could give us a pass, and we told them that we wanted to go to Brussels, and they said, well, we'll arrange it. So they gave us each passes that led to Lille and vicinity. You change trains at Lille for Brussels train. So hear some of those children that you saw going.
Arrived at Lille and were just stepping onto the train to Brussels, and the American MP there said, "You can't take that train." And we said, "Why not?" And he said, "No Americans can take it." And I said, "But we're on our way to vicinity." And he looked at me, so I handed my pass. And he said, "Oh, okay, get on."
You said you were going to Versailles.
Is that?
She said
to Brussels.
Yeah, but when he said you're on your way to where?
Brussels.
Yeah. He let you get by.
Yes. Oh, we said we were on our way. Did I say Versailles?
What did you mean?
On our way to vicinity.
Go to vicinity.
That's the whole
thing. He wasn't sure where vicinity was.
Right.
Jane, how about, would you read the
purpose for us, and everybody can,
if you can,
join in as you can.
To keep alive and develop the spirit of overseers, to maintain the ties of comradeship with our fellow service, and to assist further any patriotic work, to inculcate a sense of individual obligation to the community, state, and nation, to work for the welfare of the armed services, to assist in any way in our power the men and women who served and were wounded or incapacitated in the service of their country, to foster and promote friendship and understanding between the United States and all the other nations of the world.
Well, that's a very worthy list, isn't it? It takes several people to do all that.
I'm going to say a little bit. I can't say a great deal, but I did find out a few little tidbits about the early days of the Meraki unit. Ruth Stevens sent me a bound copy of the carry-on from 1921 through 1927. And it was a lot of fun to go through them. In 1921, carry-on was 10 cents a copy or 50 cents a year. 1920, the price was raised. The 1923, I beg your pardon, to 20 cents a copy, 75 cents a year. Finally, in 1926, they decided to get it out to go to everybody. So they were going to give it out with the dues, but not increase the dues. But every unit was supposed to get a $25 ad to cover the expenses of carry-on. That was done for 2 years as a trial. Then in 1928, the dues were increased to $2. But that was to include a subscription to carry on. That's just a word about that. In 1923, July 14th, earlier in 1923, the report of the Extension Chairman National stated that new units were being formed, listing 14 new ones, including one in Milwaukee. On July 14th of 1923, on Bastille Day, a remembrance of duty in France, I presume, a luncheon was held at the City Club by the so-called Wisconsin unit, it was called that at first. And they had had 5 new members since convention, which was only about 3 months back, and more were expected. Early in 1924, the first president of the Meraki unit, Wisconsin unit, Jessica Anderson, made a survey of a state. 308 letters were sent out to postmasters, YWCA and ARC secretaries, ex-service women, newspapers, and hospitals, and resulting in articles on the front page with pictures and name of the secretary of the unit, so we got a little publicity out of it. They also discovered had answers from 172 women in the state who had served overseas. 11 were ill or disabled service women who may work to file through and help as needed, and 39 new members only 6 months after the unit was organized. On March 1st, 1924, they had their first annual meeting.
of a Wisconsin unit at the Hotel Astor. Two guests from Chicago came. Unfortunately, Anne Boleyn was in Paris. Also two guests from Minneapolis. Major General Hahn, the commander of the 32nd Division, and his wife were guests, and it was primarily an informal, pleasant meeting. In 1924, well, this is just beside the point, which doesn't concern our unit particularly, but the convention was in San Francisco at the Fairmont Hotel. Rooms were $5 for a single with bath, $7 for a double. And the round trip fare from Chicago to San Francisco was $86. That did not include Pullman, however. On November 24th, had been decided as Defense Day by the National, and a disaster relief team was to be set up. The entire Wisconsin unit was indexed as to the service in emergency that they could help with, and also as a skeleton organization in case of military necessity. This report was turned over to the ARC, and the Wisconsin unit was praised for a good job done by the president of by the national president. Some of the early members, as listed in various parts of Carry On here, I'm going to read the names, and some of you may have had some contact or heard something, knew something about them. Jessica Anderson, who was the first unit president and followed as 6th Corps Area Vice President, which is the same as our 6th Corps Area Director now. And she held that position for 1925 and 26. Helen Patton, and I remember Helen Patton. Helen Patton went with us to one of the first area conferences that I went to. I don't know whether you remember her. Remember her? And she was the National Emblems Chairman from 1924 and 25. She had that job when the new little pin was designed and made, which was like the center of this one, but just the round, small round pin for every member. She was also the second unit president from 1925 to 26. Jeanette Spencer, who was president 27 to 28. Madge Houghton, and there's another one I'm sure some of you remember. She was chairman of the Charter Investigation Committee when they were trying to get a charter from Congress. That didn't develop, and she also was involved in the work for incorporation in the state of Indiana, which where we are incorporated now. Catherine Darling, I know I've heard many people speak of Catherine Darling. I don't know too much about her, and I didn't find too much about her except just her name. If anybody knows anything interesting,
speak up. Elsie Darling, not Catherine.
Yeah. The officers of the unit in 1925 were Cornelia Van Roop, first Vice President, Rebecca Flint, second Vice President, Matilda Willop, Corresponding Secretary, Elizabeth Cahoog, Recording Secretary, Amy Leach, Treasurer. I didn't say anything about any of those. I've never heard their names. Just listed them. Anybody heard had any contact? Anna Heil, H-E-I-L, was directress of the Wisconsin Nurses Club, and they had their second, and she hosted the second annual meeting at the Nurses Club. Agnes Kirchhoff, I'm sure all of us, or some of us remember. Agnes Kirchhoff was in Milwaukee from 26 to 28, and moved to Madison and remained in Madison. However, she kept her ties with the Milwaukee unit when the Madison unit folded. Theo Byrne, who was in Madison, we remember her because she left us the legacy. Thank you, Ella. It's wonderful.
Too much.
Somebody makes you find the word when you can. And then there were three members who were, one was recreation director at Rest Haven, which had become U.S. Veterans Hospital 37, and one who was a dietitian there, and one who was an OT there. Rest Haven, by the way, was in Waukesha, but our unit was active and working for it. In 24 and 25, they decided it would be nice to exchange visits with Chicago officers and get to know each other. So we still try to do that. October 24th, October 24th, in 1925, the Sixth Corps area held a conference, the first conference, in Milwaukee at the Astor Hotel. Dinner had Colonel Gerard Sturtevant, representative of Major General W.T. Graves, the commander of the Sixth Corps area. He emphasized the necessity of national defense, comparatively small, and mentioned that a comparatively small percentage of our national income was spent here on defense as compared with European countries, including Russia. At the same meeting, a rehabilitation report made up by Dr. Frank Richmond and Dr. W.F. Lawrence of Madison surveyed the work in Washington, made a survey of the work in Wisconsin, and prepared it especially for WOSL. Mrs. Patton, who was the president at that, or I guess it's Miss Patton, isn't it? Anyway, Helen Patton, hopes that the conference will become an annual affair and other areas will follow suit. So we were the beginning, the starter for something. They got good publicity in the papers. There were people president from many areas in Wisconsin, from St. Louis, one from Syracuse, New York, and a very large group from Illinois, especially Chicago. In 1926, a unit was formed in Madison, and the Wisconsin unit became the Milwaukee unit. Theo Byrd at that time was vice president of the unit. The Milwaukee unit entertained the 9th National YWCA convention. at an overseas lunch for foreign delegates at the College Women's Club, and also a second luncheon at the City Club for the members. Mrs. Wealthy Fisher, the wife of Bishop Fisher of Calcutta, India, spoke on occupations that had been opened up to women in India, specifically weaving. Did you ever think about weaving not being open to women? It had been handed down father to son, apparently, there until this time. Jeanette Spencer, who was service chairman of the Meraki unit, sent in a notice. There was a tornado followed by fire in Murfreesboro, Illinois. ARC set up a hospital, and Jeanette Spencer established a canteen there, which was open for 18 days, often 48 hours without sleep. The value of 18 months overseas, really, of overseas war experience, really was a lot, she says. Let's see. So far I had on those. And that took us pretty well up to the end of 27. That was as far as I got any material. There were two articles in one of the 23rd of 23 carry-ons, one by the American Legion. In the aftermath of war, U.S. is threatened by forces of radicalism, Bolshevism, Sovietism, and anarchy. Washington-based organization was getting pledges from boys 12 to 15 never to go to war, no matter what the issues. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
In the same issue, there was an article by Mary Roberts Reinhardt. There's an attack on existing form of government, furthered largely by women. Astounding amount of propaganda for disarmament. Initial impulse from Soviet Russia. It behooves every woman to watch organizations she belongs to and what her children are being taught in school. Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar. History repeats itself, doesn't it? There also, and I couldn't find it, we found a little tiny paragraph, a sentence, really, last night, and I couldn't find it again to get the exact wording, but it was by Nikita Khrushchev, and he stated that, and I don't know the basis for this, I don't have any proof of it being accurate, but he stated that it wouldn't be possible to turn the Americans in from capitalism to socialism all at once.
Not socialism. Communism.
Communism. Okay. Communism. That they could get all at once. But if they could get their workers working with our young people, mm-hmm. it wouldn't take very long before the country mm-hmm. would begin to think socialism and pretty soon be communist. So.
How smart.
Yeah.
And exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The main thing I found about the service of the groups was service to overseas women in the hospitals and apparently a very big effort to locate people that needed help and so on. There were, soon after the unit was established, there was a new government hospital for TB women in Milwaukee. And the Wisconsin Milwaukee unit was very active in working with them. decorating the hospital and ornaments and cookies and the regular type of service that we was given. When there were 11 nurses in the TB home, the unit managed to get a set of dishes so that the patients didn't have to eat off institution china. they also helped at the citizens' military training camps at Fort Sheridan. And actually, that similar type of service. Now, there might have been other things in there. I didn't have time to really cover it thoroughly, but that's as much as I got out of it. Does anybody have anything else?
Excellent.
Have a
very interesting.
Now, Jane, let's go from the past now to the future. And Jane is going to tell us a little bit about the Oral History Project, which became a national project last year at convention. Jane?
If you open your mouth wide enough, somebody's going to put their foot in it. And last year, it was I who put my foot in my own mouth by proposing the idea of oral history to the WSL. And consequently, I became the national chairman. Automatically, I think that happened. Anyhow, this year has been very interesting because it took a while to get it going. I wasn't too familiar with how to do it, and I had a friend who happened to be the speaker last year, who lives in Lansing, and is very well versed in historical and archives and this sort of thing, and she has been working on oral history for quite a long time, and is just aghast at the amount of history of women that's just gone down the drain because nobody's ever recorded it. And this way it will become verbal history that will be recorded. And our tapes are going to be stored in the Schlesinger Library at Radcliffe, where they have have started a library on women. And so Geneva wrote to them and asked if they would be interested, and we got a very nice letter back saying, yes, they would very much be interested and they would appreciate anything that we could get together and send to them, and they'd be waiting to hear from us. And then at the board meeting in January, the National Board decided to join the Schlesinger Library as members, and so they put it in under my name. So I immediately got a very nice letter from the president of Radcliffe accepting our membership and congratulating us on the work we were doing and telling us that they would be waiting with open arms for our work. And nothing has been sent forward to them yet because we really haven't gotten that far with it. But I've had not an exciting amount of material back from any of the units. In fact, we have 47 units in WSL, and I've heard from 20 of them out of the 47. They got their reports back to me by, tomorrow is supposed to be the last day, but I had to have my report in the National before that, so I sent my report in on Friday. And I told them at that time that I had 19 reports back, and while some units had indicated absolutely no interest, that they weren't planning on doing anything, they didn't want to do anything, that was the end of it, 12 or 14 of the 19 had definitely indicated that they either were doing or had done or would be doing in the future some tapes. And then some of them mentioned people that they were definitely planning and wanted to get tapes on because of their age and the importance of their background. But I want to tell you, there isn't a single gal who's a member of WSL who doesn't have some interesting history to give. And I keep having people trying to explain to people that everybody's history is interesting. It doesn't make any difference who you are. Your very life is going to be of interest sometime in the future to somebody who's doing research and pulls out one of these tapes and listens to it and will say, can you imagine having to ask someone's mother if they could have a date, because a couple of the people that have been recorded have told about before they went into service how they had been very carefully watched by their family, and in order to go on a date had to get permission from their families, and the families had to meet them, and you know how our lifestyle for the young people is now. And so imagine what it's liable to be 50 years or 100 years from now. But I think that this is turning out to be one of the most interesting kinds of projects that we could have. And we're going to have some very interesting history deposited in our name. And it isn't something that's just going to happen this year or next year. It'll go on, because no unit is going to get all of their people in one time, although the chairman of Lansing history, of the Lansing unit, and this is very funny because the Lansing unit is not a unit that's been very interested in doing much of anything from the standpoint of national or anything like that, but the chairman of this unit has gotten very much interested in it, and she has announced to them that they will have seen her by the end of October. All 25 of us will have had our history recorded by that time. Well, she has actually done about six, and she said, I'm not going to worry too much about it during the summer, but in the fall, I'll get everybody lined up. And you know, they've done it. And this is very surprising. Some of the people that have been the least interested have, when they've come to do their history, discovered that they had done some rather interesting things. And many people who have given their histories, one of the gals in Detroit, a World War I veteran, whose tape was played at their 60th anniversary in December, when she listened to it, she said, you know, I told you things that I don't think my family ever even heard before. And all of us who have done any of these tapes have had the fun of learning about people that we've known for a long time and things that we never knew about them. I never knew before that Mary Burnham had three tours in Europe, or in overseas. One in Guadalcanal.
New Hebrides.
And one in India and one in Japan. And a lot of the things that she told in her history, I've never known about it. I guess it wouldn't have been any particular reason to have known it, but it was fun finding it out. And I had a delightful afternoon yesterday with this young lady right here who gave me a fascinating tape. The only problem was that so many of the really good things that she told me were told to me before we started doing the tape or while we were having lunch, you know, and then we never did get them back on the tape. But people seem to think this is such a bugbear, but I'd just like to have you know that while you've all been sitting here talking, I've been taping, and I'm going to let you hear what's going on.